And welcome back. This is the Developer's Guide for Windows 10 Insider Preview. I'm Jerry. I'm here with Barry and Chris, managing everything behind the scenes.
Yep.
And my good friend here, Andy. We are talking about adaptive UI.
So in the middle of a few sessions talking about the whole thing, about adapting your app to work across different screens, across different devices, how you can make it light up on those different devices. So there's a number of different facets to that. So we had a session, if you haven't watched it, if you're not watching this in sequence, which was about the design concepts, a conceptual one. Yeah. Now we're going to get into some of the practical things in XAML, a lot of new stuff that makes it easier for you to create an adaptive and responsive UI.
That's right. And so for XAML applications, you have a lot of options. So let's talk about the adaptive story and see what it really means to you. So first, we have this responsive ID. So we have this an application that we can, let's see, there we go. As it gets a little bit smaller, you can see it starts to move. And this is a wrap grid, so it's all automatic. I'm not doing anything really programmatic with it. So I also have the idea of an adaptive UI. So as it gets smaller, everything slowly starts to change. But then when it gets too small, it actually changes the way it's laid out so it fits more appropriately and is a nice user experience. There's no getting past the fact we have the option of scaling as well, and this would fit something like a chess game or things that don't mind getting smaller. Of course, you don't want to go too far because then your hit targets get too small. But the idea is you could just scale your application to get larger and smaller. And for some applications, like maybe a clock or something, you know, this could actually be appropriate.
And this is not just about talking about having different screens on different devices, because of course when you're running these kind of apps on a PC or a laptop, a large tablet now, they're running windowed, so the user can resize them. There's a lot more flexibility than perhaps there was in 8.1 when things tended to run either full screen or snapped to one side or the other. Those modes are still there when you're running on in a tablet mode, but if you're running on a desktop or laptop, you know, they're just like resizable windows the way we've always had.
That's right, the way we've always done
it.
All the way back to WPF, we've done this sort of thing by dock panels and stuff like that.
Yep.
So you also have the idea of a tailored design. So a tailored design is that third one. So we have responsive and adaptive, but we also have tailored that allows us to write an application or a UI specifically designed for a certain device, but not always for a certain device. Sometimes it's for a certain experience. And so in this case, perhaps you have a tailored design for the one-handed interface. So Andy, when would you have, what does one-handed mean? What are we going toward?
So yeah, with talking about the device where you're holding it in your hand, typically a phone, and you might be just using, you know, a thumb or something to hit things. So you can hold it and interact with the UI just with one hand. Rather than the bigger screens where you are using mouse and keyboard, it's a much more sort of two-handed interaction with it.
So where I might be building a user interface for Xbox and I use MRT to sniff if it's Xbox or not and send the user down another path, that's an option, of course, or I could, of course, target a dedicated app just for Xbox. But if I'm reusing the same one, I could send them, the MRT is the modern resource technology, right? Anyway, that's what just determines what resources users are supposed to get at runtime. You can also query that, determine if it's Xbox, and send them down. It could go to main page Xbox, so they have a different experience, but you're still using all the same code in a single binary, if that's what you want.
Yeah.
But if you're going to go to this one-handed experience that Andy was talking about, how you hold the phone and you can do everything with your thumb, then maybe that really kicks in when it's a certain size. And we have recommendation for you. The official guidance is that is when the physical diagonal size, that's where we're going, the physical diagonal size of a device is 7 inches or less. And so the API to sniff this out, we have a sample up on the SDK site that shows you how to use this using a helper project, but that API is about to be introduced into the foundational API.
Yeah, this is one of those features that's kind of being built out. So there is a solution, as Jerry says, that you can see up on the regular SDK samples up on GitHub, and there's going to be a few changes in this area to make it even easier.
So you can see in this code, I mean, this is just pseudocode, but you know, once you determine what the physical diagonal size is, if it's less than 7 inches, let's say, then you would navigate them then to a specific main page built just just for that experience.
But it's worth stressing that in most cases, we see you just having a single page that you will adapt according to where it's running. So this example we're showing you there of navigating, kind of splitting your navigation paths according to some criteria.
It's almost not adaptive at all.
No, that's right. You're actually building discrete views for a particular device. But that's going to be the kind of edge case. Most of the time, you're going to be wanting to have a single page that adapts and changes it, uses the responsive and adaptive techniques that we've kind of outlined to give a great experience regardless of the screen size and orientation where it's running.
So this session is obviously about adaptive UI, not about tailored UI. That's easy enough to create a tailored UI. But before we move past it, I want you to at least make this point, going back to what we talked about in Windows 8 Universal Apps, that a multi-headed solution is still completely valid. And so if you want to have a multi-headed solution, that is multiple projects inside your solutions that share code across them, each of the heads or each of those projects and targeting their own device family, nothing is to stop that. It's going to be a great solution for you as well. It's really just going to be determined on your app and your design needs.
That's right, yeah.
This is kind of what it might look like. You might even include a portable class library so you can stretch across Windows 8.1. There's nothing to stop you from having your existing Windows 8.1 application, just adding another head to that project, which is your Windows 10 or that UWP Universal application.
Now, actually, some of you looking at this will be asking questions about the how do you create packages for specific targets and how you submit them and that sort of thing. So at the time we are doing these sessions, if you're watching recordings later on, we just have to build, and essentially we're not ready to talk about that store experience yet. So we'll be following
up. Let's be clear. Andy and I are very ready to talk about that. It turns out the store isn't ready for
the
us to
show isn't ready.
Off just yet.
Yeah, so that will be coming. And obviously, before we get to RTM, we'll be telling that story. So we'll be able to show you how that works.
That's right. All right, so let's move past that. Let's talk about our adaptive tooling, specifically inside a XAML application. There's a couple of things you can do. The first one is defining visual states. So visual states is probably... A lot of developers have not been implementing visual states because they're unfamiliar with it or they don't realize its power. That is obviously going to change. This is going to be the leading technology to make it easier for developers. So if you don't know visual states, it's time to learn them. We're not going to teach them here. We'll show them off a little bit, but certainly there's a lot to learn with visual states, and there are other courses here on Microsoft Virtual Academy you can use. But what does a virtual state give you? It defines XAML views, the view of that app. So I'm inside let's go back to trees. I am inside a XAML tree, and it has all kinds of controls in it. When I am in this state, let's say your first state is wide, then these are visible and they're in this location. When my state is narrow, these are visible and in this location. How do I know which is visible and what location? They're all defined in the visual state, and it contains the definition of where things go. You can do so much more as well. Like, you may even have an unauthenticated view of your application. So the user's not logged in, no big deal. We're gonna go to that state. A couple things get grayed out, and you show the button to log in. Then you have the logged in state as well. All the things get great or turned back on, and the login button is gone. So you can select visual states not just for orientation and size, but you can also do it for logical states inside your application as well.
And to tie this back to what we were talking about in the design principles session, if you've watched that one, where we were talking about having these snap points of targeting, of building a UI for like a 5-inch phone, and then the 8-inch tablet, and then for the 13-inch kind of laptop PC. You can represent all of these as different visual states, and we're gonna show you the technique to switch between them in just a moment.
It's probably an overstatement to say this, but because visual states understand the animation so well, right? You can create what's called a transition as you move from one visual state to another. Because it understands it so well, if you're building animations and storyboards inside XAML, odds are you're actually doing it wrong. Not that you're technically doing it wrong, but your approach may not be correct, because usually 90% of all the animations and storyboards you'll create inside your application are to show some sort of transition that'll be built into a visual state. A lot of developers don't dabble in visual states because they use animations instead, when the reality is you would get animations for free once you move over to visual states. So again, we're not teaching visual states, but there's so much there that it's worth just thinking about. And their only place to preview, at least today, the only place to preview visual states is inside Blend. So Blend will show it, and I'll demo that real quick. In fact, if you don't mind, Andy, I'm going to jump in and just let's just build out. I have a sample project that will kind of show off how visual states will implement it here. So let me switch over. Am I on the right monitor?
You are.
All right. So I've got a simple layout here, just some text. There's a title, a body of text, and this image as well, right? And so I'm inside Blend right now. And I go to the States tab, and you can see I've got some states predefined. What my application, these are all going to be based on the width, right? And so you can see that at 1,000, it looks like this, really almost no change. 800, it gets a little more narrow, some fonts change. I'm resizing the image, and as I go into 0, or the smallest, most narrow, I don't have that defined. So I want to go in and kind of define what that looks like. So if I switch the view so I see what this looks like on a phone, I can see the experience is actually sort of crummy, right? Yeah. I don't like the way this looks, especially when I go into what would default to a really narrow. But you can see this little red dot and the fact that it's outlined in red. That means it's memorizing or it's watching to record all of the property changes I'm about to make because I'm defining that view. So the first thing I'll do, I'll select the image and I'll change it to be 250 wide. Reality is I'm going to have to make some serious changes to this image because it's not going to fit in the same kind of look and feel. So when I change the height, I'll make it fit a little better, but that's actually too small. What I'm going to do is change its stretch so that all that it does, I'll use uniform to fill. So it sort of truncates it just a little bit, but it makes it so it fits in this more narrow view a lot better. And so she looks really happy, right? And I kind of moved off that cat holding spinster of the other one. So maybe this is a better UI altogether because of that. All right, so I've selected the text, and it's over on the side. It's in a grid right now.
Yeah,
I'm going to move it.
Truncated now, isn't it? It's pretty
poor.
Yeah,
it's just not right. Right? Yeah. You could read it, but it wouldn't be a great experience.
Not a good experience.
So I'll just change its row location. And so if I do that, I can come over and, let's see, I'll just search for it here in its properties. I'll change its row from 1 then to 0, then I'll move it to the top. Wait a minute, I'm sorry, not row, column. Okay. I'll change this column from 1 to 0, and we'll move it to the left. That's what I wanted to do. Now I'll change this row to 2 and bump it down. So you can see it sort of fits nicely. That's what I want. And it kind of spans a little too wide, so I'll make sure that its size is correct. And I'll do that with max width, so I'll still let it be flexible, but I'll set its max width from infinity to, not 500, 4, okay, a little bit smaller. We'll make it 350. And so that looks pretty nice, right? There's definitely, I could do some other things. Like that large yellow title is a little bit big. I'll make it so that the font is just tweaked down a little to, let's say, 16 maybe. Yeah, we'll just leave it at that, right? This isn't a production app. We're just kind of looking at it. Yep. And then I can make changes to the body if I wanted to. So now when I'm at 1,000, you can see what I want to apply is the smallest one. So let me switch over so you can kind of see how they all look side by side. So when I go to the next one, it's getting a little bigger. The font is changing. The image is changing. And I can move things around, hide them, show them, whatever it is I want that matches the visual state. So that's the implementation, just creating and defining the state. There's a lot of ways to change what the state is, but we can show that a little bit later. Let me go back to slides.
And just to stress that it's Blend that allows you to do that visualization of states. That's one of those things that you can't do in Visual Studio.
That's right, that's exactly right. Any property change that you want to do can be done in a visual state. So it's not like you can only do these types, only this data type. Yeah. None of that is true. You can change absolutely everything.
Yeah, and all that you were doing there was changing property values, and then that named state will just apply all of those property changes when you switch to that state. And all it's doing under the wrappers is writing XAML for you when you're using that design experience in Blend.
I could have used behaviors to switch the state around, but I could definitely do it from code behind as well. So visual states, generally speaking, let designers define as many looks of a view as you need, right? As many states as you need. But let's talk about how you change it, and that's with the Visual State Manager. So the Visual State Manager is a static class, so it gives you a static method of go-to. And Actually, or is it go to state? Now I'm suspicious if I got that wrong. I think it's go to state.
Yeah.
Well, I would fix it, but let's do it this way.
It is. You see the code on the bottom there. Visit
yeah, that's
state
right.
Go to state.
State that should be that right there.
Yeah. Okay. Got
yeah,
that.
That's the idea. So here I am in code. You can see in this case, I'm attaching to size changed. And depending on whatever the current width is, I switch between them. So this would match the demo that we just did perfectly. So if the size changed is it defaults to zero, right, the smallest. And if it's greater than 500, then I'll go to 500, 800, 1,000, and that way I would get 1,000 for everything larger than, or I would get the largest one for anything larger than 1,000.
And this is easy enough. And this is how we have done this with
yeah.
Visual State Manager. This isn't a new feature for UWP. This is how we've done it in the past in
That's right. This is a WPF.
WPF and in
Silverlight.
Silverlight and in Windows apps, store apps for 8.1.
That's
just
right.
All the same. That's the way you've done it in code.
That's right. So we're really talking about something that you've already got. We haven't even talked about the Windows 10 enhancements to visual states that we'll talk about in just a second. There is this third one, true here. So this true is really talking about the transition as it moves from one state to another. And I'm saying, yes, apply a transition. It doesn't, there may not be one, but if there is, it will play a storyboard
animates
and move things around
yeah.
in a really pleasant way. Yeah. All right, terrific. Now there are adaptive triggers inside visual states that allow me to take that state and move it, it allows me to move into that state without having to write code.
So this is the new thing we've got in UWP, which does away with that hard-coded method of switching between states, which you can still do. But this is a nice declarative way of doing it, just straight out directly in XAML, which is pretty nice.
That's right. So let me demo what an adaptive trigger it looks like and how you and kind of how you apply it to an existing one. So I've still got my app here. You remember my states are all defined. And what I want to do is not write code behind. I want to use the new adaptive triggers. And so I'll do that right here inside in code. I'll have to do it. And so all I have to do is add the state trigger, the adaptive trigger specifically, where I set the width. So in this case, it's the min width. The min window width, right? And so I start with zero because this value means this value and up is what it really means. So the min width. So zero and up gets the smallest, and I'll just paste this in. I'll do the same thing for 500. I'll actually do 501. So as I kind of jimmy it, it looks just right. And then I'll do the same thing for 800. I'll do 801. And now let me just paste this in for the larger, and we'll make it 1,001.
So this is the XAML way of switching between the size changed. It's the XAML equivalent of what you had in C# code before.
This is the XAML equivalent. That's exactly right. And what's great about it as well is now it's all, because it's declared, it's designer ready.
Yep.
And so some of the tooling around this actually has it. Now watch this. I'm going to resize it. And so this is 1,000, and you'll see some fonts change. There we go.
The image
is changing.
Yeah.
Getting a little bit smaller again, so that everything fits nicely. And then it's so narrow here, because I'm getting to 500. It's so narrow here that it allows me to switch over to the most narrow.
Yeah.
And I could have as many breakpoints in there. We talked about the snap points before, how we go from 320 and to, I forgot the next one,
5, 7.
7.
Then 5, we go to the 4, next, 5, whatever
we have
it was.
A whole slide on it.
Yeah.
Come on. And, and how we go, anyway, go from that, and you can set as many as you want, but then these are sort of the defaults. And the goal is really that your application fits the in-between states. And I'll point out in this demo that this actually doesn't do a terrific job because you can see all that white space. It handles 320 just fine because that's what we designed it on. But what it doesn't handle is 500 because this is 499.
So some work still to do.
A little bit of work, right?
Yeah.
Why would I have this needless? So it's great in its specific spot, but it doesn't handle the full range. So adaptive triggers, they are a zero code solution, which is what we like, because we like things to be reliably reusable. We like them to be reliable, of course, but we like them to be reusable, partly because we don't want to write them twice, and partly because the more code you have, the more opportunity for errors that you have as well. Also, because we can declare it, it will have a design time experience that we actually don't see today. Visual Studio 2015 right now doesn't show adaptive triggers, but they will soon.
Yep.
They will soon indeed. All right, so that syntax, just as a reminder of what we did, So all we added was the adaptive trigger inside the state triggers property of a visual state. So those visual states were automatically created when we start defining states inside Blend. And then we can go in and we in this case manually, but eventually through the tooling, we'll add the adaptive trigger for min window width. It's worth saying that there's also min window height, so that if I want to handle the resizing of it going up and down as well.
Yep.
You don't see that, I don't anticipate that being a common use case. What's nice is, if it is, there it is.
Okay.
There are other types of, it just makes sense, right?
Yeah.
There are other scenarios though, Andy, where, you know, height and width are nice.
Yeah, so effectively, I guess those ones are kind of hard, they're under the covers, they're wired into that size changed event. So those are absolutely the XAML equivalent of the on-size changed event handler. But like you said, you know, that's okay, that does fit one use case, because that's kind of nice. You're going to, a lot of the adaptive design, the adaptive behavior you want to build into apps is going to be based on the window width and or height. But yeah, like what about maybe you want to show visibility of some bits of your UI according to which device family you're running on or something like that.
That's right.
So how do we do that?
Okay, well, that conveniently is a custom trigger. So we know we have adaptive triggers that come out of the box. In this case, we have one for height and one for width. But, and that's it, right? If that doesn't meet your needs, thank goodness we have custom state triggers. And so these adaptive triggers. And so creating a custom trigger might be the best way to explain it. And when you see how trivial it is as far as the code, this might make sense. So let me drop out and see if I can put together this demo. So inside Visual Studio, I'm just start with a blank so you can kind of see it in its easiest, most basic form. So let me start off by, I'm going to add a folder to put the trigger into, just so things are organized in a nice way. So I'll add a quick class. This is going to be an orientation trigger, handling landscape and handling portrait. So the first is to make sure we have the right base. That's the state trigger base. I'll need a using to make sure that's there. It doesn't have any overrides or implementation I must do. So that means I start creating properties of my own. So just a simple property of orientation and then a constructor when it's first born. So I'll get the size changed event, right? That's when orientation may change.
Yep.
So I'll just wire up to that first, and then I'll sniff out to see what the current orientation is. The math to figure out orientation is easy, but there's an easier way. I can use the application view, which has a property that tells you the current orientation. So I can just ask if that equals the property that the user set. I don't know if that makes sense. So I can use that set active fires the trigger. So let me switch over to Blend so you can sort of see how it's all laid out. I'm going to need to create a few states so I can switch between. So let me add two rectangles. This is, just a blue, and let me make a red rectangle. And I'll use those then to change the states, to figure out what states they are. So I'll create a landscape state and then a portrait state. So hopefully that makes sense. Now let me set up those states so that they do what they're supposed to. So I go to portrait, the red, I go to landscape, the blue. All right, so it's very simplistic. You would create a more sophisticated and probably a much better UI, I'm sure, Andy.
I'm sure I would.
All right, I'm going to need a reference to my trigger, so let me just make a quick namespace reference up here. We'll make it T that goes to triggers. And then, almost identically to how we did state triggers before, only I'll add my trigger instead. So this first one is visual state landscape. So I'll set that custom property I created called orientation to landscape and then to portrait for the other. That's it. That's all there was to it. All I'm doing is call that set active. And as soon as set active is called, it's ready to go. Here, I'll run it. And you can see as I start to move its shape, let me move it down. You can see as soon as it's portrait, it switches to the red. As soon as it's landscape, it switches to the blue. Right? That's the simplest implementation I think I could do. But I could create these custom triggers with any logic that's right for me. I made it really simple when it changes, switch between orientation and portrait. But Andy, you could make it as complicated as you want as well to listen to see if the user is authenticated or not.
Yeah, you could, yeah. And I guess the key there is that you need to build into that custom trigger some kind of an event handler that's reacting to the environmental thing that's going to cause it to switch one way or the other. So.
That's right.
And then call that setActive method that's a method of the base class in that custom state trigger in order to say whether this trigger is active or not. That's kind of how it works.
Yeah, it's impressive how simple the implementation is. Yeah.
And there's some great samples in the SDK samples up on GitHub, so you can see lots of different ones. And actually, I've got one that triggers on device family in a demo I'm going to do in the adaptive code session, which is coming up.
Since device family can't change, I would imagine that would only run at construction time. You don't have to listen for an event.
That's right.
I've seen whether or not the network is available. That's a great one. You know, whenever your network suddenly is not available.
So that'd be nice. You could have an online or an offline warning, just a bit of UI to warn the user that they're actually offline at the moment. Mm-hmm. So you could have a custom state trigger that's on the network state changed event.
Yeah.
That would show or hide that automatically according to the current connectivity.
I could ask the size, of course, of the window. I could also ask the size of the control. Sometimes you don't care about the window, but if the control gets too narrow because it's responding, then you can start changing just that control. Another cool one is the input. So whether or not it's mouse or keyboard or touch, not mouse or keyboard, sorry, mouse or touch. Also, I can ask for continuum. As I move from one in a device that can switch between a touch, and I can take off the keyboard, let's say, and make it a tablet or a laptop, I can listen for that and shift up my UI just ever so slightly. Because it's custom code and because you can do absolutely anything, it turns out you can do absolutely anything. Yeah. So it's pretty great, and all you have to call is that set active, passing true or false, and that basically fires the trigger for you.
In fact, we've got some examples coming up, I think. Yeah.
So this is the code we didn't do, but this kind of shows it off, right? It shows how we take this state trigger base, making sure that that's the base, but there's nothing for us to implement. It just gives us basically this set active method that we can call, passing in the Boolean.
So you have your logic in there, and in this example here, it's looking at the windows.applicationmodel.resources.core.resourceContext get for current view qualifier values. That rather snappily named little API gives you loads of information about your current environment, including the device family. So this is the way you figure out which device family you're running on at the moment, whether it's mobile or desktop or Team, which is the Surface Hub.
Don't misunderstand us, though. We aren't saying this is how you determine if you're on a phone.
No.
Because that's a totally different...
It's a device family spans, the mobile one spans phones and small tablets, for example.
Yeah. That's right. If you're going to use device family, you're really asking, am I on a small tablet or a phone, not just a phone. That's a common misunderstanding, so I think it's worth saying. Another change to visual states is the introduction of setters. Because visual states have so many storyboards and they understand how to animate things, by default, that's what they do. So we had to introduce this object animation using keyframes. Basically allows us to go from things like visible to collapsed, where there's nothing in between, so there's no need for an animation. There's no halfway point. Maybe I'm changing a font size and I do want to animate from 10 to 20, that would be cool looking perhaps, but some things just don't have that in between. So you have the overhead of a storyboard when you don't need it. So now I can add, just like I added adaptive triggers to a visual state, I can also add a setter, which is similar to a setter in a style.
Yeah, and actually it's worth mentioning that when you were in Blend before and were creating your visual states, it's kind of unfortunate if you like, but whenever you change the value of like on a font size or the stretch mode on the photo, it actually always puts those in the context, in the XAML, it creates them in the context of a storyboard, which actually isn't really what you want in that context.
Right. Of course, storyboard, the reason it does that is because prior to Windows 10, that's all there was.
That's right, so it's still got that behavior. And that kind of might make sense if you want to fade something in and out in a storyboard. You want to change the opacity from 0 to 100 over a period of a second, and that's a storyboard, does that nice transition for you. But when you're switching from one visual state to another, you don't want it to just be snap, do it. So this is a way of, these setters are a way of really getting, removing those unnecessary storyboards and replacing it with just do it.
Yeah, that's right. And you can still specify the time that it occurs because there still may be a storyboard transition for the rest of your state. So these can be used with a storyboard. The syntax is, the only thing that's really worth noticing here is it's not like a setter in a style, where a setter in a style looks for the property and sets the value. In this case, it looks for a target, which is a combination of the element name, so my text 01, and its font size, the property name. So that is that might catch you at the beginning where you're used to saying setter and then immediately typing property, but that's not the way it is. Another piece that you have in your XAML toolkit that is going to help you out is the relative panel. We slightly talked about this when we were talking about XAML controls yesterday. And that is basically there's the relative panel, there's something similar in Android, and then there's something similar on iOS for iOS developers as well. And it basically allows me to create a panel, a kind of canvas, that sets a child in it to be the anchor. So I may have multiple items in it, and so I say the first one is related somehow to the panel. Is it to the top left corner, the bottom left corner, is it in the center, or the right, wherever it happens to be, and I can manipulate that with margins and translations as well. So that's the anchor, but from that point forward, other children are relative to the anchors. So now the next one that I add is above that element, or the next one I add is to the right of the anchor, or to the left of the anchor, or below the anchor. What's great is then I can start moving that anchor around and everything follows it, and so it's easy to move. So I may have several anchors, several pieces of the application that I set up inside a relative panel. And the big win is around animations and using storyboards, where I can use even those setters that we just saw. I can set the value of where, if it's above or to the right, or I need to move it because I'm at a snap point. I don't have to figure out, all right, now which column does it belong in? Which row does it belong in? Instead,
yeah. So in fact, in your demo before, you moved the text from to the right of the image down underneath it, and you were doing that through manipulating the rows and columns of a grid.
I did,
but that could easily be done, and probably with much less XAML, using a relative panel.
That's right.
Yeah.
To be honest, Andy, I mean, I did that obviously because the tooling hasn't caught up to all
well,
the functionality.
Well, I was kind of leading to that. So at the moment, at the time we're recording this, the tooling for Relative Panel is not as helpful as it could be.
Yeah.
So there's still developments to come in that.
But you know, I love that too. I'm glad they didn't hold back and we didn't get it, because now, as developers, we have all of these tools, right? And so all of these things are coming, and we can start to, the sooner we understand them, the sooner we start to implement them, the better our UIs are going to be as well. The tooling will catch up, right? By the time RTM comes, I'm sure we'll have a totally different experience. But right now, developers already have so many tools that just help us to build this adaptive UI in a very simple way. The relative panel, but as well as all these advancements around visual states and just the ability to leverage visual states that have already been there.
Yep.
Okay.
So, that was good. So
that is we do as developers,
yep.
As XAML developers.
Yeah. So we looked at the ways you can, the tools we've got in the XAML toolset, the elements, some of the new things, the visual state manager, setters, and the triggers. Cool stuff to help you build a great adaptive UI.
Open up Blend, open up Visual Studio, start trying these out for yourself. You'll be surprised how simple they are, and the syntax as well. Even a custom trigger, you can create one in about, like I did, in about 2 minutes. It's no big deal, just a lot of quick work as soon as you understand that base trigger, Well, you know what? It's in the deck. You know, you can rewind 4 minutes and you'll get the whole thing. All right, Andy, can't wait to come back. There's still more to cover, not about UI adaption, but now code adaptation.
Which is another bit of the story. We'll see you soon.
All right, go get some crackers and then we'll come back.